Yeah, let me turn it up a little bit. Yeah. All right, I got you. Dang.
Mac computer can't support a simple app, I guess. Huh?
I know, they just don't get along. I went with the Mac because apparently they don't get viruses, but that turns out not to be true. So.
Yeah. So what's going on? What are you up to today?
I just got back from Michigan. They had a storm up there this weekend. I went up there for 2 days. Got back last night. And then I bought another implement for my business, so I've been trying to figure out how to use that. It's from Canada, so there's a little bit of a learning curve as far as that. Let me turn this off.
You bought a what?
I bought an implement from Canada. It's going to go with my business. It's a post driver, but it'll drive post up to 18 feet tall. So it goes up and down, and they use it in the middle of February in Canada, so it works pretty good apparently. But it's got a lot of different technology that we don't use here in the U.S., so they had to wire it differently so that it'll fit my machine. And there's a different schematic, I guess, as far as the way they do things compared to the way the U.S. does things. So there's some confusion. They wired it up to one of my controls on my Bobcat, but they put both controls on one stick instead of putting it on two sticks, so I can't operate. Yeah. I got to put both thumbs over there on the one stick to operate it. So I got to get with them. I have a video call with them tomorrow to show me how to rewire that to where it works with both sticks, basically. So
what's your plans on implementing that? Like, what kind of stuff do you have in mind on what you're going to do with that?
I've got some future projects, some fencing stuff already contracted out that I'm going to do. My brother, as you know, has got horses and stuff. He's wanting to use it. And then I've got a lead on driving some pilings through a company. Hopefully it pays off. If not, these attachments are, like, super hard to find. There's only three companies that make them. And one company wants, like, 50 grand for them. One company wants 20 grand for them. And then there's a company that I went with. It's not as nice as the other ones because it requires a skid steer to operate it, but being I already have the skid steer, that's why I went with it. So I'm really the first one to have it in this area. So I'm hoping to, if it doesn't work out or anything, I'll just sell the implement. I don't think I'll have a problem at all getting rid of it. If this contract doesn't work out, it's still in the works, but I'll tell you about it later. It's not really that exciting. It's not that fascinating, honestly.
So what size post can this, so you're saying like you can do like a fence post, but how
it'll go, it'll drive anything from an, what did it say? 10-inch I-beam, like on guardrails and stuff. It'll go from anything from that all the way down to a T-post for like fence. But it can do 18 feet long ones, and it's not a hammer. A lot of people think you want to use a hammer when you do that. Well, after doing some research, vibrating is more, it's more expensive. Oh. It's easier on the material, that kind of thing. It's easier on the machine. It's louder. There's the downfall of that. But it does a lot nicer job. It's easier to keep them nice and plumb. Whereas a hammer, it drops it 6 inches at a time kind of deal. And it can get out of wonk. I mean, even if you hit something, you know, like, there's just a lot more room for error with those things. They're faster. But for what I'm going to be doing, I don't think that's going to be the route I want to go. So I went with the vibrating one, basically. So we're going to try it. Like I said, I got a meeting with them tomorrow to try and walk me through the process. We'll see. It could be a complete flop. You never know. You know,
yeah,
but I'm trying.
That's awesome, though.
The thing is that I'm trying to do something different than people aren't doing in this area, as you know, be the only guy that does it so that I can get the work. Because there's only one other fellow that's doing this stuff, and apparently he's just absolutely outrageously charging people for this thing. So hopefully I can snake in there, and he's real far away. He's not even close to this area, so he's got to drive all the way over here to do the work, and he's overloaded and he can never get to people and then they got to wait for it. So hopefully I can take over this area is basically the hopes. The biggest thing on the whole thing is it's not something I'd be able to do every day. There's not that much work of it. You know, there's not that much volume of it, but being that I do line work full time anyways, it'd be perfect for me to fill in, you know, it'd be a perfect fill in job for me, which is what I'm looking for. I'm not looking to do it full time. I'm just looking for something when I'm not doing line work to run over and do this kind of stuff. Cause it's a one, two man deal. Knock it out in a day and be done with it. So that's the plan. But
so let me ask you this: can you do like house piers, like piers that they would use for a home? Like I know that's not very common around here. I've only had, I think, in like 1,600 inspections, I've had one house that was on piers.
You talking about piers like stilts, like houses on stilts?
Yeah, like something you'd see in Florida, like on the beach.
Yeah, I mean, if they're under 20 feet, you know, I don't know. What do you got, an 8-10 foot ceiling, I guess, as far as.
Yeah, I mean, like if you're talking the ones in Florida, you probably, what you have probably wouldn't work. But like around here, I think just like a single story ranch that would be on piers, because you can handle that.
The beams that I'm going to be driving, they're around 16 feet, and you drive, they say 10% plus 2 feet. So 16 feet, you know, I would think I could probably do a house pier around here because you got to remember, it goes up and down on an elevator kind of style, like I said, on the attachment itself. But then I also have the boom height, so I can lift my arms all the way up. It's not stupid, but I have little things here from when you buy equipment, you get a little toy with it. But basically, when I boom all the way up, and then my attachment, it'll the head of it's all the way up here, so I have all this distance, and then it runs down on a little elevator deal. It's like a forklift attachment, basically, and it's got a vibrator at the top, and it runs all the way down to here. When it maxes out, then I can use the arms to go all the way down. So you know, I got the whole. I got more. I don't have just this space. I have all the way up here. So
yeah.
If that makes sense, it's kind of hard to explain because nobody does it in this area. They just don't make them. So
yeah, I've never even heard like what I had to ask you twice what it was called because I haven't even heard of that.
It's called Vibe Drive Technologies, and it's a guy out of Alberta, Canada. And the way I found it, I was looking for these things and I couldn't find anything. And I actually talked to a bunch of skid steer manufacturers. I was on the phone for hours, and they were all like, "Yeah, we don't make stuff like that. We don't make stuff like." So I just Google imaged one of these post drivers, right? And I just found this really bad pixelated picture of something. And I was like, what is that? It's called the Long John. I'm like, what is that? So I clicked on it. And the link on the picture didn't even go to the guy's website. Like, it was just on a wormhole. And the next thing you know, I claim up on this Vibe Drive Technologies out of Canada. And there's this whole website. This guy makes these things specifically for what I'm looking for. So I just contacted him. I didn't think it would go anywhere because it's from Canada. You know, I've never bought anything from there, which is a whole other process. Went down a wormhole with him, ended up really liking the guy. He's a good dude. He's a small business owner up there that manufactures these things by himself. He's getting bigger than he wants to be, but you know, whatever. And he ships all around the world, basically. Got with him and it arrived last week. So,
nice.
Yeah. I've never had to buy anything, go through customs and stuff like that. So that was a process. Never had to do it through a business at least. So there was quite a bit of paperwork, but he does it so much. I guess he was able to walk me through it. I bet the hardest part was actually getting funds to him because it was a large amount of money and he wanted a wire transfer, which I understand, but I didn't realize how many banks will not transfer wire outside the U.S. Like my local bank wouldn't do it. I had to actually move money to a larger worldwide branch bank that I don't actually have an account with. I had to get an account, move the money there, then wire it. You know what I mean? And then there was like a week later, you know, it took like a week for the money to get in there. And then it took like another 3 days to send it to them. And then it was like flagged one time and then they had to okay it. And it was just a process. And I felt like I was really kind of screwing the guy over. I was worried he was going to think I was just some scam artist or something. Cause he's never met me, you know, he just talked to me on the phone. So yeah. I had to keep assuring him that it was a real deal. Like I needed it, blah, blah, blah. But man, I tell you what, it was an ordeal. So when it finally showed up and it was just a fight all the way, like the driver called me, and you know, for anybody that don't know, I have a one-lane bridge right outside my house. You can drive across it all you want, but you cannot turn a semi off of it onto my driveway. My driveway is just not set up for it. So the guy come on a semi, and it didn't have a lift gate or anything. I had to unload it. I told him, I can unload it, just stop at the road. I'll come out, unload it, you know, we'll be good to go. Well, I originally was going to have him stop at the main highway there. It's got that giant parking lot, the old tavern there, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So there's this giant parking lot. I was going to have him pull the semi in there. I was just going to throw a skid steer on the trailer, run down there, unload him, put it on the trailer, sign the paperwork, and be done. Well, he calls me. Hey, I'm at your driveway. And he had the bridge all messed up. My neighbors are calling me like, hey, this dude's trying to get down here. You know, I'm like, oh, my Lord. It's raining. You know, it's like 6 o'clock at night. And the guy called me an hour before, told me where he was. He's like, hey, I'll be there. You know, I was like, okay, cool. Just call me back on this number and tell me when you're close, and I'll meet you at this location. He's like, yep, sounds good. Guy didn't speak much English. And next thing you know, my neighbor's calling me. He's like, hey, there's a semi that's got traffic just jammed up here. And I immediately knew what it was for. So it was an ordeal, but I got it. So it's done and over. We'll figure out how to use it tomorrow.
So do you have like people or like companies lined up that you can work with to use this thing? Or do you know who you're going to go after?
Yeah, I've made contact with some of these companies. It's kind of so specialized that it doesn't fall under like a general or a generic thing. Like it just falls under, like you'd be surprised how many people that run into needing this done that don't do something that you would think relates to it at all. Driving these piles, like it's such a universal attachment. Like once you see it, and I'll make a video, put it on my channel and everything once I get it going. Cause that's another side of this whole thing is this guy doesn't do social media and I kind of cut him a deal. He kind of cut me a deal on this thing to make him a social media like thing for it.
Yeah. Send me a link. Cause I'll put it in this description of the podcast and in the video.
Yeah. I'll do that. Like I said, once I get it all going and stuff and we drive one or whatever, I want to try and make it kind of professional for the guy since he did me such a good deal on this thing. But anyways, long story short, if you watch that, you'll understand what I'm talking about. It's really hard to explain on a podcast what it is. Basically a pile driver for a skid steer is what it is. But it has so many different uses for other things. Like fencing, for example. I could knock out fencing in no time with this thing. And being on a skid steer, you know, if you're on a hill or whatever, you can move the machine, all this and that. And it's got lift points on the side, so if it's a heavy post, like you don't have to pick the post or anything, you just chain it to the post, chain it to the machine, lift it up, it'll pull it up. You just have to have somebody guide it in there, drive it in. It even has a remote where the guy on the outside can sit there and remotely drive it down, so you don't have to like try and figure it out through the windshield and stuff. It's set up for stuff like that, so which is cool. So,
but you need to hit these new neighborhoods, people who need mailboxes.
Yeah, I can do all kinds of things, man.
Hammer their mailbox post for them.
Yeah, I want to do like he promised me, and he sent me videos. Again, they're grainy, you know. They're taken by blue car guys that don't really have good phones up there, I guess. But anyways,
yeah, it's probably like a Motorola.
It looked like a flip phone video when he sent it to me. But they were it was February, snow on the ground, and they're driving these piles in the middle of Canada, winter, like in February, like just as fast. About like the speed. And I was just like, man, that thing, I mean, if it's in frozen ground in Canada where it gets below 30 degrees, I'm like, it's got to work in Illinois, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see where it goes. If it doesn't work out, we'll sell it. We'll go on to the next adventure, you know?
Well, it's a good idea because, like, even on, like, the home inspection side of things, really just any trade, offering something that no one else does is a good way to get you a lot of business.
Right.
I mean, you're probably not going to be doing this driving posts every single day, but all it takes is that one big company that needs you for something, and you show up, and then you get their work for
right. And it's such an easy attachment to use, and it's so well built that the other side of the thing is, being I have it, I can rent it out to somebody that wants to use it because I had him wire. Yeah. So I have a Bobcat, and Bobcat uses a real strange electrical system now. They didn't a few years ago, but the new machine that I got, they call it DIN. It basically, all the old machines use 12-volt power to communicate with the cylinders and to move stuff. The Bobcat uses like a digital signal, and it's got to go to a computer box and blah, blah, blah to do all this fancy stuff. I'm sure all the old new equipment coming out will eventually all be like this. I think Bobcat might just be ahead of the game of them on them right there at that thing. But at the same time, it makes it a pain in the butt because when I had this thing built, he's like, what are you running? And I said, a Bobcat. He's like, oh, okay. Well, I got to wire that a specific way. And I said, well, I got another guy that runs a Kubota, and they use 12-volt power to change cylinders and whatnot because it's got multiple hydraulic functions. And he's like, well, you know, I'll wire it this way. So basically, if he wants to use it, he's going to have to unplug a few things, plug it in, and then it'll work for his machine. Where I want to use it, I'll have to unplug that, plug it back into mine. It's not like a standard thing like on a truck where you just got a 7-pin connector in the back for your trailer. You know what I mean? Like, there's just machinery, there's just so many different connections out there, and that's the biggest pain in the butt when you're buying these attachments. I bought that attachment, that sickle attachment. I'm making a video right now, I'm working on it, but a sickle attachment for my skid steer to trim my driveway. It's a Wolverine, it's a Chinese manufactured piece of junk, but it works really well for what I do with it. It came with no wiring, so that's why I know so much about this wiring, is because I actually had to do a lot of research and figure out how this thing works, and then I found a company that actually found a need to make harnesses for these things because people were having so many issues buying this equipment, not being able to use it. So after talking to them, they sent me a pretty expensive wiring harness just to get this stupid piece of equipment. I got it at an auction to work. Works great for what I do, but it was a process getting to it. And that's just where technology these days is going. Unfortunately, when it comes to this equipment, it's just, it's a pain in the butt, man. It really is.
You're talking about trimming all those trees that are all along your driveway.
Yeah, the honeysuckle, the trees, it grows out real far and scratches the vehicles up. And then you end up in the neighbor's yard because you don't want to be driving up against that. Well, when you worked for us, you knew we used to cut it by hand for 25 years.
Just staying in the back of the dump truck and
it was
drive slow.
It was horrible. And I was going to buy one of them cool mowers you see the city guys have that flip off the side of the tractor and they mow it all from that. But it makes a mess, and they're really expensive. And then I got thinking about using a sickle. I was, a sickle mower in the back of a tractor. I've been around for 100 years. Thinking about trying to get it up at a 90-degree angle and then just going down. But the problem with the 90-degree angle on the tractor, the only biggest sickle I think I found was 10 foot. Not even 10 foot. It might have been 8. But anyways, for one, it's right behind your head at a 90-degree angle. And two, 10 foot, we got them dump trucks and semis and all this and that. Well, 13/8 is legal height, so it's not going to get all the way up. Well, then I found an attachment for a skid steer. They use them to, trim around ponds and stuff. But, again, it goes on the front of my bucket, and it goes up and down, and it stays at a 90, and it has a hydraulic cylinder to put it out flat. So you can use it, you can stop it where at whatever angle you want. So I can mow hills, I can do all kinds of stuff. I can mow out in the grass and a lake, and it's really cool. It's just cheaply made because it's from China. Because there's not a huge demand for them, so they're not really investing in the market. But I got it to work, and I can boom all the way up. My uncle that lives on the lane with me, when I trimmed it the first time, he's like, how the hell did you get all the way up there? And then I showed him the attachment. He's like, how much was that? And it was like $3,000. I'm not going to lie. But the amount of time it saved. I was done in 20 minutes. And I can do it 2 or 3 times a year instead of doing it one time in the beginning, one time at the end, and just dreading it both times. Because after we trim it all down, then we got to clean it up. There's this huge deal. Well, now I got that rake attachment for my tractor. I trim it. I put the rake attachment on the tractor. I just go in big piles, and I take my grapple, and I just grab the whole pile, throw it in the burn pile, burn it. We're done.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
I'm changing things up out here. I'm trying to modernize the property maintenance style, I got a lot going on. I work a lot. Now I'm traveling a lot with work. So trying to, stay ahead of the game,
Well, this, all the equipment you have saves a lot of time. I feel like, especially compared to when your parents first got the place and how long it took them just to maintain things.
And the thing is too, you got to remember when they bought the place, they were the first ones to put the house out here. So they started in small increments, we didn't always have a pool. We had the house, and then we did the landscaping on the front, and then he did it on the side, and he did it in the back, and then he added a pool. He just kept adding. I bought the place. All this is here. So I'm starting, I'm starting with all this maintenance stuff already, whereas when he started, he just kept adding and then maintaining as he went. Well, I came basically a clean slate with everything already here, and it's all behind, and it's a pain in the butt. It's a lot of work, but I wouldn't have it any other way, but.
Yeah, it's a nice piece of property.
Yeah, it is.
You want to explain to people, because we didn't really touch on it, what it is you do and what your background is.
So I won't go too far. I guess I will a little bit. I was brought up in a family, a landscape family. So they owned a landscape company. It started back in 1941, great-grandpa kind of deal. And I'm fourth generation, basically. Long story short, dad got cancer, passed away when I was in high school. So the whole time coming up in my life, I was going to take over this family business, right? Well, when he passed away, I don't even know if I was 18, 17 or 18. I guess it was 17.
Yeah, 17, I think.
So when he passed away, I was at that real moment in life where I was like, ooh, now what? Because my mom wasn't able, she only did the books of the thing, and my dad ran the whole thing. And then my uncle was his partner in it, basically. It was time for him to branch off and do his own thing. He didn't want to work with my mom, basically, long story short. And it all worked out, before anybody feels bad. So we sold the company. This company got sold. He bought most of the equipment, and he started his own thing, which he's doing really well with. I'm talking about getting him a channel because he's got some kick-ass stuff coming out. But anyways, so he's got his own company going on, and then there was me in the middle. And I worked for him a lot, but, it wasn't my dad, it was my uncle's company at that point. So it just didn't feel like mine, and I didn't really know what to do. because I set my whole life up thinking I was going to take over a family business. So, you know, I jacked around at school. I had the cat in the bag, dude. You know, we were doing really well as a company. You know, at one point, we had 30-something employees, this and that, you know, making a lot of money, a lot of clients, stuff like that. Well, it all came crashing down. So then I, sounds weird, but somebody that went to my mom's church knew I was kind of in the market for a job. I jumped around. I worked at a railroad a little bit. I worked at basically like AT&T, Charter kind of deal, doing phone stuff. Well, this lady asked my mom if I'd be interested. She's like a recruiter for our local power company and asked if I'd be interested in doing line work. I didn't even know she, I thought she was talking about football. You know what I mean? Like, I've never thought about a lineman my entire life up until 18 years old. She mentioned it to me, and I thought, I'm probably not interested. I'm just going to go get my associates, because I thought that's what you're supposed to do. You know, everybody after school is like, you went with me. You're just supposed to get your associates. Nobody knows what you're doing after that.
I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah,
I didn't know
so we went to college a little bit there, and I'll never forget when the teacher said, I don't grade on attendance. I just grade on the test. And I thought, well, why am I here? I could be making money. So I went and got a job, and then next thing you know, I dropped out of college. So, sorry, my computer's turning off. So I dropped out of college, and I found a school down in Tennessee that for $10,000, they'll train you to be a lineman, basically, right? So North American Lineman Training Center. So I gave them the money. I went down there, got me a double-wide trailer, moved in with two guys I didn't know. One was 37, one was 28. I was 19, 20. I don't think I could drink yet. I had to be 19 or 20. And I went to lineman school. Little did I know that that was just a pre-apprentice school, and it actually didn't get me a job before, like when I graduated. I didn't have a job after that. It was just training. It was just an additional training that was not required by the IBEW that I'm in or any of the contractors that want to buy people or recruit people out of there. It's not required. It was completely out of my pocket. Not knowing that, you know, like somebody kind of sold me on it. Anyways, I did it. Learned how to do the stuff, came back, couldn't find a job. They just weren't hiring. Economy was kind of bad at that time. So I just kept applying, and then I was trying to figure out a career field that was kind of like line work, or basically as close to line work that I could find. And the only thing I could find was cable. Now, a lot of linemen make fun of cable linemen. I mean, I get it. I do it myself now. But as a kid, you think, well, yeah, they use buckets and they work on poles and this and that. You know, it's got to be the same. You know, it's got to help. So I joined with they're called Spectrum now, but it was Charter at the time. And I applied for a line tech position, and I ended up being like a house tech, which kind of sucked because it wasn't really what I was wanting to do. But I did learn a lot about like coax, and you know, I learned a lot about how to like wire houses and stuff. Which a lot of that stuff's obsolete now because everybody uses Wi-Fi, but. I did learn a lot of cool stuff there. Did that for a couple months, a year. Ended up actually getting fired from that job. I shouldn't say fired. We mutually decided to go different ways. I didn't understand. So I had the wrong call out sheet. You're supposed to print there. They printed them out for you like once a week. And long story short, they printed out the right one. I think I'll never admit this till now. But I had the wrong call-out sheet, and I looked, and then I wasn't on it that Saturday. So I take the old lady out to dinner, Red Lobster, you know, I'm fine dining her, and I get a phone call that I got to go change batteries in a remote down in a crap hole town. And I'm like, no, I'm not on call. So I'm arguing with the guy, and everything's recorded. And I'm basically like, no, dude, you got the wrong dude. Like, I'm not on call. And he's like, I'm looking at the sheet. You're on call. You have to come in. And I'm like, no, because I would have had to drive 45 minutes, get my, you know, change clothes, get my van, drive down there, and it was like for like batteries on a remote or something. Like I remember reading the trouble call, and it was just something stupid. Like I was just like, I could probably call this guy on this number and be like, hey, idiot, change the batteries. But the thing was, back then, if you had bad batteries in your remote, all you had to do, like people knew the system, they would just call and be like, my remote quit working. And then a tech would drive out there for free, change the two double A's, and be like, there you go. And there was no service charge. You'd get free batteries every time. And once people found out, like it was a big flaw at the time.
Yeah.
So, and it always happened in the crappy areas, and that's where it was at. And I was pissed, and I said some things on there that I probably shouldn't have, not knowing it was recorded. Long story short, Monday, I didn't go. I ended up going in, doing it. That's what it was, something stupid. Went to work Monday, had the rest of the weekend off, went to work Monday, and I got called into the HR office, and I thought, well, it's probably not good. So I went into the HR department, and they basically were like, on the play record thing, and it just was me going back and forth with the dispatcher the whole time. You know, I've got itinerary of this meeting out, and it's showing that I'm on call and this and that. And then they pulled up some other stuff on me that I did some work for a friend, and I took too long, basically. I was hanging out, and I got in trouble for that. But you know who it is. I won't say it on air, but you know, he lives a Marine there. But so I hung out at his house, wired his house all up, and I was supposed to just do an install in 3 hours and get out. And I ended up hanging out until quitting time and getting out of there. But there was a lot of things. Like, they didn't pay me well. They offered me, you know how, like, when you hire in somebody, they're like, oh, yeah, you do this for 6 months, and then we'll give you a raise and let you do this. This is it. Every time it came up to that point, because I worked there for like 8 months, I think. Every time it came up to a point to get a raise or something, like, oh, you got to wait till next month, or you got to test, or you got to do this, or you got to do that. And they never let me excel. You know what I mean? So I never got to make any more money. And it's just hard as a young guy to ever want to work any harder, you know, because I have a good work ethic. I always have. And I just went in there ready to just, like, knock stuff out, get out of there, do my thing. I'm real big on, like, just getting it done and getting out. I don't care to sit around and you know, talk. And this, I just want to get in, make money, get out. I got stuff I want to do. So it bothered me that they wouldn't let me move up in the company. So I left. I basically threw the keys on them. They were like, what do you think we should do? And I was like, you know what? And I threw the keys on this. And I was like, I just take me home. And I gave them the old 2-day notice, you know, 2 day. So
yeah.
they were like, yeah, that's fine. And then the whole time I'm getting drove back by my supervisor, he's just looking at me like, are you really going to quit? And I was like, yeah. He's like, what's wrong? And I told him, he's like, all you got to do is bring that up. And I'm like, I think his name was Leon, the guy. And I remember saying to the guy, like, you didn't say two words in there to defend me, you know? Like, you were just as scared as I was. And long story short, he didn't help me. And I was like, I'm done. And they dropped me off at the house. And then they were, like, wanting a small talk. Like, this is a really nice place. I'm like, yeah, trying to help my mom afford it, you know? You assholes, like. So yeah. That got out. And then a buddy that I had another buddy working at a railroad. He called. I called him. I'm like, hey, man, you guys hire? And he's like, yeah. So I went down and I worked for the railroad and switching, unloading rail cars of basically fuel. They'd take it off the barge, put it on the rail car, ship them out, vice versa. They'd unload them off the cars, put them on the barge, send them down the river. Did that for a couple months, and then I actually got a phone call to be an apprentice lineman, my local union. So, except that
was that JF, your first one, your first gig?
Yeah, so the way it works, you sign up with the local, which mine is Albat. You sign up to get on an apprentice lineman at your local hall. You sign up through a program called Albat, American Line Builders Association, blah, blah, blah. So I got an apprenticeship. JF Electric went to the hall and said, hey, we need an apprentice. So they didn't have any on file ready to go, so they called the next guy after interviews, because the whole time going through all these other gigs I had to do interviews, and it put you in a pool basically, and I got rated 1 or 2 or something like that, and my number got called. So they called me and they said, hey, can you show up Monday to be an apprentice? I said, yeah. So at that point, you accept the apprentice position. It was for JF Electric on a high line doing H structures, 138 lines, which is a big two wood poles with a cross in the middle. There's big three wires. It's 138,000 volts. It's a transmission line basically. I was just a grunt out there. I had to move crane mats, you know, chomp around in the mud, get stuff for guys, run hand lines, stuff like that. Wasn't real fun, but it was 7 days a week, made a lot of money. So first paycheck was like a month's worth of wages, like right off the bat.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh. But then after that, I think I worked like 77 days straight, like no joke.
Jeez.
Yeah, and they didn't really tell me that. Like, I didn't really expect, like, and it was like 12-hour days, like, and it was a little bit of a drive because it was a high line, because those go for miles, you know. You might start right at the house, but by the end of it, you might be 50 miles away. So, anyways, long story short, I remember my girlfriend, which is my wife now, I remember when I was, after like 7 days, she's like, I don't know if I want you to do this. I was like, well, I'm stuck now, you know, I'm making so much money, like, what do I do? So, long story short, I stayed with JF till I topped out, which is a 4-year apprenticeship. You got to do book work and stuff, take tests, stuff like that. Everything was like every other Tuesday. I had to go to class for a couple hours. But once you do that, you get your 4,000 or 7,000 hours on the job training, like out in the field. And then you got to have so many class hours. I think it's 1,000 or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's been so long ago. I've been topped out since like 2015 or something like that. But once you do all that, on the job training and stuff, you you get voted on. As long as you pass your test, you get voted on at the hall if you can be a journeyman lineman. I got voted on, so I got approved. And once you get your golden ticket, the only like rules are basically, man, you work in your local and work there long enough to pay back the union, you know, for all the training you did. Because you get paid the whole time you're an apprentice. Like, you don't owe any money. You had to buy tools, but once you buy your tools and your books, like, you get paid, you know, benefits, healthcare, all that stuff is paid by the union. It's nothing out of pocket. So when you're done, you got to work in their local and you got to basically pay that back by training the other apprentices. It's kind of the agreement. So I did that for a couple of years and basically got in the good graces of that. And then after that, really weird time, some storms hit outside of the U.S. I shouldn't say outside of the U.S., like the Virgin Islands. And an opportunity came up to go down there. So I went down there and worked, which was very life-changing for a couple reasons. One, the money. And two, it was dangerous. It was very dangerous. And it was mostly dangerous depending on who the person was. You could either go there with a straight head on your shoulders and make a bunch of money and get out, or you go there and completely ruin your life, because that place is ran very corruptly. I'm trying to put it like politically correct on here. It's an easy place to get away from you. It could ruin your life or it can make your life. So luckily I went down there with a good group of guys and we went down there, made some money and came home. You know, helped some people out. That place is so screwed when it comes to like infrastructure. It's the government just steals money from the people. They have corrupt politicians and stuff, and they can say whatever they want, but that's what's going on. And it, I feel bad for the locals that live there because they all know it. They all joke about it, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's like us. We joke about our government that sucks.
Yeah, we talk about how taxes suck and everything else, but we still pay them. You know.
Yeah.
Taxes are theft. But here you go. Yeah, so same situation, man. It sucks that you got to see those people go through that. But at the same time, you know, the checks kept cashing. I just kept working until the work was done and I came home. So,
how long were you down there for?
All together, it was like 6 months. But it was like, I think I worked actually like 166 days. I actually carved a day, and every day I was in there, I carved a little thing of my hard hat on the brim. Because I actually have it hanging up in my shed. It's kind of cool. Like, every company I've worked for, I've got all these hard hats. Because I remember, I work out of the union hall. I don't work for that company. So, like, when the job's up, I go back to the hall, and I get dispatched to a different company. So, and they give you all new PPE. So, it's not like, my mom looks at it every time I quit, or we call it dragging when you leave. I had 8 companies I worked at last year. And she's like, oh, my God, you got to quit doing that. Because, I mean, I could stay at these companies if I wanted to, but then the grass is always greener. I mean, everybody knows that,
yeah.
You know? So me and these group of guys, we jump around, we chase all this money and chase all these better deals. We might be closer to the house, might be farther. You just don't know. But, so I've been doing that lately. It's the new gig, like in line work, is storm chasing. Like, you're not somebody unless you're a storm chaser, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let me tell you.
That's you kind of, you probably not as much anymore, but I remember for a while there, like any storm you would be gone. Like, it'd be lightning outside. I'd text you, be like, going on storm.
Yeah.
He's like, yep.
Yeah. And that was just working for like Ameren, like in our local, like the power company around us. Well, now, so I hired on with this company called Praxel, and they don't do contract work. Like, they don't go to power companies and like, hey, we want to change your poles out and do this. They don't do that. They don't work for contracts. All they do is they have contracts with all these power companies all around the United States. And the halls and whatnot, and they're mutual assistance for disasters and stuff. So, like, the hurricane I went on, I didn't go with them, but I went as a subcontractor for them. I've been working up in Michigan a lot under these guys.
Did you do New York? I thought you went to New York at one point or something, like a snowstorm.
If I had a map, I'd like to get, like, I'd like to get a map of the United States and, like, put pins everywhere.
Yeah, do your little pins on
it. I'm running out of states that I can't, like, include the ones I drove through, but the ones I've actually worked in, I mean, just to list some, like, I've been in California, I've worked in Texas, I've worked in Alabama, I've worked in Louisiana, I've worked in South Carolina, Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Maine. I just worked in Maine, like, last weekend. I just got home from Maine last week. Michigan, Minneapolis, Illinois, Indianapolis, Ohio. Arkansas. That's about all I can think of off the top of my head. That's a lot, dude. You know, and you got to remember on a lot of that stuff, like, I'm union. So a lot of states, like Missouri, where you're from, they're not right-to-work state, but they're not as strong a union state as Illinois. Illinois is, like, super strong union. A lot of people say, and I'm sure comments are going to go crazy if anybody's a union hand of any, you know, carpenter or whatever, but usually Democrats are, like, pro-union and Republicans are pro-non-union because it, like, fits their agendas more or whatever.
I feel like that's changing, though. Like,
it's not that it's
Democrats changing. Are more like, I don't know.
So
I don't want to get political on here.
Yeah, don't get political on here, but
it's kind of flipping.
But you got to remember that, like, I'm blue collar. You know, I'm hardcore blue collar, so obviously I'm pretty pro, like, pro America. You know what I mean? And we kind of both know where, like, the economy's heading and, like, where the country's heading, where we're sending money and wars and this and that. So obviously the agenda and the things are kind of turning a little bit. I won't say what I vote for, but there's a lot of guys that were kind of like shifting gears over the last couple of years, because we're just being lied to, you know. And, you know, they say make sure you vote for your check kind of deal. But, man, if the economy takes a crash, man, we just don't work. That's why I'm storm chasing right now, dude. It has 100%. There's no contractual work here where I'm at. Power company's not spending any money, and a lot of the times they get money from the government, and they're not giving it out. So what are they doing with it? I don't know. A lot of it has to do with this Green New Deal. I think they're investing a lot of money in some areas that just doesn't really pertain to me. So
yeah, I kind of wonder about that because I never really thought about that. They're like, this administration's like wanting to force everybody to go like all electric and get rid of fossil fuels. So does that make more work for you? Because you guys are probably going to have to like beef up the electrical infrastructure to
yes
handle
and no.
everybody getting electric cars and
yeah. Electric so yes and know. No. So like in our area here, we've been installing like a lot bigger wire because we have so many more amps running through it. The older days, you know, everybody had like 100 amp service on their house. Well, now everybody's got 200, 320s, 400. You know, like a 3 or 4 air conditioners and everything. Everything's electric. So obviously they're trying to keep up with demand. But at the same time, with these like Teslas and stuff, like it's putting a lot of load on the system. I don't care what anybody says, but you know, you got solar too, so it's kind of like helping out. But it's not really like life changing here in the Midwest. It might be better in like Florida, but it's not really like here. So we're installing a lot of bigger wire, and we're also changing circuit voltages. So if you don't know, like. We have, like, where we're at here, we have two different systems. It's called 4 kV and 12 kV. So it's 4,000 volts and 12,000 volts, basically. It's actually 7,200. Phase to ground on 12 kV is 7,200 volts. So that one wire up there on a 12 kV system is 7,200 volts. On a 4 kV system, it's 2,400 volts. They call it 4 kV because you times them by 1.73, and they give you your phase-to-phase voltage. But if you phase the ground, it's 2,400 volts. But anyways, the 2,400 volts is kind of an obsolete system because it's low voltage, but it's very high amperage. Well, the problem with high amperage is it creates a lot of heat, obviously. So, like, the jumpers on the poles and stuff, they get hot and they burn out and this and that. It's harder on the system, and it doesn't travel as far. Whereas 7,200, it's a lot higher voltage, but it's a lot less amperage. That's how that works. Like, the lower the voltage, the higher the amperage. The higher the voltage, the lower the amperage. I know it kind of sounds backward, but that's how it works. That's why transmission lines are 138,000 volts, because they go long distances, you know, but they have low amperage on them. So I got moving on. Right? So anyways, what they're doing now is they call it conversion job, right? So what we're doing now is we're going to all these cities and stuff that are on a 4 kV system, and this is really involved, but we have to change every transformer, every lightning arrestor, every capacitor, any of that stuff that's voltage sensitive to a higher voltage one. And then we take everybody's power out, we energize the lines with this 12 kV, and we re-energize everything, we turn everybody back on, switch all the tap changers. And what it does is it takes a lot of load off the substations. And that's like the new thing that they're doing in this area is they're changing the voltages that they're on. Where I was at in Detroit, like we have what we call a Y system here. In Detroit, they have what they call a Delta system. It's real old school. It's real dangerous. Like, it's one of those deals. Like, we're in our area, if a wire falls, car hits a pole, knocks the pole over, the wires hit the ground, it trips it. It might hit two or three times with reclosure, but it kills the power. Everybody loses power, and everybody's like, what the hell is going on? That kind of deal. In Detroit, it's a Delta. So it has no reference to ground, basically. So if a car hits a pole in the Delta system and it falls down, it stays hot. And it will burn everything that touches it. It might be in a chain link fence. I mean, people die every year touching chain link fences that have wires on them. They have no idea. It might be down the street. But the whole, you know, it just looks like it's just nothing's going on.
Because it's not necessarily like sparking and stuff like you see in movies. Like.
No. I mean, it can get nasty. I got some videos on my phone I can show you. But it, Delta's dangerous. And they have it in California, Detroit. I think they have some in New York and some areas. Chicago. But it's obsolete. They're doing away with it. They're trying to, at least. But there's some places like Detroit, for example, there's just so much work that needs to be done. And it would be billions. I mean, probably trillions of dollars to change all that. So they just keep band-aiding it and putting it back up and changing little sections here and there. Because they do have both up there. But it's an obsolete deal, and they're doing away with it. But getting back to the economy as far as, like, our work, they're doing a lot of like infrastructure stuff as far as like transmission, like making sure these long, big, you know, power lines are as up to date, basically, for upcoming things. The distribution standards of things, the bigger city stuff, we're really doing a lot of work. We're not really doing anything out in the country because nobody, I don't know any farmers that drive Teslas kind of deal. You know what I mean? If anything, they're the ones with the solar panels actually helping. So. There's not a lot of that going on, but inner city stuff, we're doing a lot of work, man, because everything's going electric, and it's not just Tesla. I mean, every manufacturer, I think, is kind of dabbling in this, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think, like, this administration's kind of, like, they're trying to push it too fast. It's like...
We're not ready for it.
No. We're not ready for it. I don't think they understand the consequences of, like, if everyone just went electric all of a sudden, like, what would happen? But yeah. Something I've been noticing on new houses, one of the big home builders out here, they're offering 400 amp services now for houses. And so I did like a 1500 square foot house the other day, and it's got a 400 amp service. And so the guy, his reasoning was, because it was only $1,500 to upgrade. So it's like, you might as well, like if you plan on being there for a while, you know. Yeah. But his reasoning was, with everything going electric, if him and his wife both eventually get electric cars, all their appliances are electric, get electric water heater, electric furnace, you know, you're going to be running. And then him and his wife work from home. Like, they're going to be running a lot of power, basically.
Yeah.
If they got both their vehicles plugged in, their dryer, their AC, their furnace, like all that stuff's electric, their stove. So I could see, you know, I wouldn't spend $5,000 on it, but if it's a $1,500 extra bucks on the grand scheme of like a $300,000 house, you might as well, you know?
Right. Well, you always want to underuse your power as far as your amp or your meter when it comes to like your box. You know what I mean? You're much better just using two breakers than having to tandem everything. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a no brainer. Like you said, I always encourage people to upgrade. You know, a lot of times I run into these people with 100 amp services and they're just, you know, you open it up because we do everything from the top of the meter base up, you know, and I don't know how many times that the service wire is just like melted because they've just got just tandem stuff on there going on. And it's just the transformer don't care, dude. I got news for everybody. That transformer, it don't care. It will pump all the voltages and amperes that you want. I mean, obviously there's a limitation to everything, but it's a lot more than what that house wants. So
yeah,
the weak link is the meter base, the breaker side, and that's usually what goes bad.
And I feel like 100 amp really isn't that much anymore. I mean, maybe if you're like, you got a 2-bedroom, 1-bath house and it's just you, that's probably fine.
Yeah.
But like, if you're running electric everything, and you got, you know, multiple people living in the house And then especially if you've got like an electric car on top of that.
Yeah. Is 200 amp the standard now? What's the standard supposed to be?
200 is standard on new homes. And then, like I said, there's some people that are opting for that 400 amp service.
Yeah.
Which honestly, before this year, I've never seen a 400 amp service on just a regular 1500 square foot home. Like the only time I ever saw it was like, there was like a $1.1 million. Well, I've seen it a couple times. Usually they're $600,000 to $2 million houses that are like 5,000 or 6,000 square feet. They got 400 amp service.
Yeah, I know. I know in our area, 320 is kind of common for a bigger size house. I probably honestly need a 320 panel on our house. Not so much because the house is big, but because there's so much like the waterfalls and the pool and the hot tub and all that stuff.
Do you have anything that's gas still? Are you? Because
I have a 500 gallon. Propane tank, and it the only thing that's on it is my my stove.
So, are you a gas stove guy?
Oh yeah, they ain't getting that. Don't get it, bud. No,
I don't think you ever go electric.
I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want the company to watch this and be mad or whatever. Screw it. Like, we bought the house and it was propane heated, and we were there for a month or two and. The propane was out, so I paid it, and it was when it was high, and it was like $1,500 to fill this tank up. So I paid it. I thought, dang it, you know, I just bought it from my mom. I'm like, dang it, I could have swore she told me she filled the propane before we bought the house. So we filled it, and it wasn't 6 months later the thing was empty again. So I asked my mom, I'm like, how much did you spend a year on propane? She's like, oh, you know, I usually fill it up once or twice a year. And I'm like, well, I'm at 6 months and I'm paying. This is my second time filling it. She's like, that ain't right. So I called her. I'm like, hey. Something's going on. So they come out and they're like, yeah, everything's fine. Well, I was like, I kept smelling propane. And they're like, oh, that's normal. It's got a relief valve. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. But I smell it all the time. But no. So I got some soapy water. You know, I'm not an idiot. And I sprayed the valve on top of the tank. And there's bubbles. Now, I had a plumber come out because we have plumbers in our family. Licensed plumber, he comes out, he looks at it, he sprays his little stuff on there, and he's like, yeah, it's leaking right there. He goes, but I can't touch that. That's on their side. It was like above the valve, or whatever. It was before the valve, between the tank and the valve, basically. And that wasn't his stuff. That was them. So I call him back. Hey, it's leaking. I just have a plumber tell me it's leaking. I watched it. Oh, okay, we'll be right out. So they come out the next day, tighten some stuff. I get home from work, everything should be good. I go out there, psh, psh, psh. Spray my stuff on there, and there's bubbles. I'm done. I'm not emitting propane in the atmosphere. You know what I mean? I got a lot of money, but I ain't that rich. So I was like, screw it. And my family, you know, Allie's family, they do geothermal. So it was a no-brainer. So we spent quite a bit of change. But, again, the administration right now is all about eco-friendly stuff. Geo going green, and geo is one of those things. So they hooked me up. I got some money back from the government. We put geothermal in, so got rid of my gas furnace, and I can hook the pool up to it now. I didn't before because it used so much propane, but now that I have a 500 gallon tank just using the stove, I haven't filled that thing up in like 2 years. That's how much we're using.
Yeah, I don't see you using much with just a stove.
No, and I'd like to run a line to like my grill and stuff. My black.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so that, and then I would like to do maybe a fire pit down by the pool that's propane or something.
Yeah, that would be cool too.
So, and I got a propane fire pit down here in the basement, but I don't have the log set or any the lighter or anything. So, but the lines ran. But yeah, so I got away from that, and I just don't. We're not electric here. I do have solar, but I don't know. I like propane. I grew up on propane stove, and people that use it probably love it. I had electric at my last house, and we didn't really like it. You couldn't really control the heat very well.
Yeah, I mean, I've had both. So my parents was propane, and then I had electric at my house, and I got it here at this house too. And I mean, I never really could tell a difference.
Yeah.
As far as that geothermal goes, how many feet did they put those lines?
I had wells done. You can do it two ways. You can either do wells or you can do like a mat that goes out in your lake. Your lake's got to be like stipulation. It's got to be like 7 feet deep minimum, and it can only be so far from the house. Well, mine, I was going to have to, like, clear a bunch of trees and stuff to get down there. You know where my lake's at, my house. So I didn't do that. I went 4 wells, and they're 80-foot deep apiece. And then I trenched. I did all the other. I did pretty much all the work except for the wells and then changing the unit out. I did all the trenching and all that.
Has it been pretty reliable and pretty efficient?
Oh, yeah, dude. It doesn't work real well. And I need you to come over. I need to hire old Rigid to come over and do, like, I'd like you to do a thermal inspection on my house. I got some heating issues. There's heat getting out somewhere. I think I know where it's at, but I need you to bring your thing, your camera over and really do your thing on that. But as far as geo in the summertime, you can't beat it because the ground stays, you know, constant 60 degrees or whatever. Dude, I can, and then on top of that, I have solar. So whatever juice that unit is using to pump the air out, solar's got it. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's working hand in hand. So during the summertime, I have, like, no bills. I might have, like, $100 electric bill, maybe.
That's
which,
nice.
Which people are probably like, that's a lot for solar. Well, you got to remember, I'm on a co-op. I'm not on the power company. The way the co-ops work, because they're customer-owned, you know, utilities, I don't get power for free. Like, if I was on a home utility, Ameren, for example, if I make more power than I'm using, it'll make my bill basically go backwards. Like, I'll get a check. But because I'm on a co-op, I only get power at a discounted rate. So you might be paying $2 a kilowatt, where I might only be paying 75 cents because I'm putting back in. So I don't actually get to zero with it. And I didn't put a battery in because they were at the time, they were like $10,000. And we did the math on them. It was going to take like 10 years for it to pay itself off. Well, I know that the batteries aren't going to be good in 10 years.
Yeah.
Who am I going to buy another one? You know what I mean? And the way technology is going these days, I just figured in like 5 years, I'll probably have a better one out. So I was like, I can always add to it. I built a system where I can add to it. So we'll put a battery in later. But again, on the Geo, it hurts a little bit in the wintertime because I feel like the house isn't insulated where it should be. And the emergency heat has to kick on if it can't keep up. And the emergency heat uses a heating element, electric heating element. And you can smell it when it comes on. And, man, it really, that gets that meter a spin.
So you're using a lot of electricity.
Plus, the solar's not always working. Usually at night when the solar's not working, I don't have the batteries. So what I make up in the summer, I think it's eaten quite a bit of it. Not all of it, but quite a bit of it in the winter, especially this winter. We had a cold winter. So, you know, I'm usually I'm the bad guy in the house. I usually go over there. When I hear that emergency kick on, I'm like, put more clothes on. You know?
Yeah.
Because
I crank mine down to 64, 65 at night.
Yeah.
And try to keep it around 68, 69 during the day. And we manage that. But my house does really good in the wintertime. It's the summertime it does awful because it's a newer neighborhood, so there's no trees blocking the sun.
You're kind of down in the hole, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just cook on my patio. Even like it'll be 40 degrees outside, and if the sun's out and you go out on my patio, it feels like it's 70.
Yeah,
because there's just no air movement and it's just direct heat, no shade. But yeah I want to get something back there eventually to kind of cover the patio that also covers my living room and bedroom windows, so all that heat's not coming in like a tin roof or something like aluminum.
Yeah,
build something.
Yeah,
but. You've got a new business now that, well, I guess it's not new. You started it like 2 years ago or something, Burns Earthworks. What kind of work do you do?
I don't even know anymore, man. I do anything that makes money. So this all stemmed, I've always, cause I came up in a landscaping family. Like it's in my blood. I can't help it. Like I'm into that stuff. I'm good at it. I know how to do all that stuff. Like, some of these new companies that pop up, they do work. I'm like, that looks like shit. You know what I mean? I know how to do it. And because we were top dog in this area when it came to that stuff. And I always wanted to get back into it, but I didn't want to work for anybody. You know, my family's always owned businesses. So they never worked for anybody. So I always wanted to own something. And I always wanted something for my kids to maybe take over, you know. So I started that for that reason. And the other reason was tax reasons. I needed write-offs. We're paying so much money and all this stuff. You know, I wanted this equipment. I needed it for property maintenance. And I thought, well, what better way to be able to get the equipment I need, write it off, and have it to help maintain the area I got? Because you got to remember, my dad had all that. He had excavators and dump trucks and all that stuff around here. That's why he built the property the way he did. Well, it's hard to maintain it when you don't have that stuff. You know, I know it's not stupid. People are probably like, what are you talking about? But it wasn't feasible for me to hire somebody. Cause I actually contacted like a turf guy, like a turf company, just to see what they charged to trim stuff and this and that. And it was going to be like $4,000 or $5,000 a year. And I was like, yeah, I can do it myself. And that's payments on a machine. You know, that's stuff, other stuff I could pay for. So that was the other reason I started, for my, basically a tax write-off, and not even a tax write-off. Just, I feel like I just leave. And a lot of people tell me, I make a lot of money what I'm doing, but I give so much money back to the government because I just don't have any write-offs. Like, I don't have any claims. You know what I mean? I got the kids, but you know, there's, you know how it is. It's a game and you got to play it. And I'm middle of the road. I don't try and screw the government because they're top dog, man, and they're always going to be. You know, I'm just trying to get back as much as I can without being in trouble. So,
yeah,
that was the reason I started it. But as far as the company goes, what do I do? A little bit of everything. So it's Burns Earthworks, and the idea when I started was I was going to do landscape. I was going to do landscape jobs. I'm through the state of Illinois. I'm licensed and all that stuff, but I did not set up my LLC to have employees. So, sole proprietorship or whatever you call it. So I can't have a payroll. It's just me. So it's just me. And I don't know if anybody knows landscaping, man, that's a lot of work. It's manual labor. And I did a couple jobs for, you know, a couple family members, a couple friends, and then a couple clients. And I just worked myself to death, dude, on top of the 40, 50, 60, 70, whatever hours I was doing line work. So I just kind of came to terms that I just can't do both. I just can't do landscaping with one person. So I've kind of shifted gears into being more excavation as far as like just operating, like grading yards. I'm as you know, I'm in the market for a mini. I've almost bought one multiple times. I just haven't pulled the trigger. I'm being picky about it. Not real happy with the skid steer purchase I made. So I'm like being real picky with my excavator purchase. So I just want to do like trenching, excavation, like we talked, maybe, you know, helping people out when it comes to like sewer issues and they need somebody to dig it up so a plumber can fix that kind of deal. Utility trenching and stuff. And then you got to remember at the same time, all the stuff I'm talking about, I am IBEW union. So there is conflict of interest on doing like, I can't like go put in a house service to somebody, electrical house service. Like I can't do that. Like that's a no-no. That'd get me in trouble. So I don't even talk about it. I don't do it, just for the record. Like, I don't do it. You know what I mean? And I know how to do it, and I can do it very efficiently, and I can make money on it. But I make a lot more money being a union lineman, so I don't do it. So I usually just, like, haul rock, you know, that stuff, that kind of stuff, mow grass. Property maintenance is, like, my ID. Like, I tell people, like, I'll do property maintenance, like, driveways and stuff. If you got a rock driveway, I like to, like, re-top coat it, you know, fix some potholes, that kind of stuff. And I'm not out there to, like, just kill people on pricing, you know. I've bid some jobs like really high that I didn't want and ended up getting them on accident. Like I did a sod job in Evansville. This lady, she's got like these ginormous dogs and I didn't know they were big dogs, but she called. She's like, I Facebook thing popped up and I was like, yeah, give me a call. So she called me and I went over there. Well, long story short, we went to school with her daughter and, I won't mention her on here, but you know who she is. But, she was like, oh yeah, she talked about you guys all the time, blah, blah. And I ended up getting the job, even though I bid it really high. And I was like, crap, I got to do it. So I had to, like, completely tear out the backyard and then install all sod, water, and this and that. And, like, it was a pain in the ass getting in the backyard. Like, I ripped her fence down on an accident, all kinds of stuff. Like, it was an ordeal, dude. And I was working 40 hours at the time still. So I did it on Friday and Saturday, like, just getting it, you know. And I about croaked doing it. It was middle of the summer. Got it done for and everything. And then I've drove by since, and that yard is just destroyed because she had, like, 3 Great Danes. And she lives in like downtown with like a little like 500 square foot yard, you know. And I told the lady, I was like, I'll put this in, but those dogs are just going to destroy this. Like they destroyed the front yard when they took them out to go potty while I was doing the backyard. Like yeah. It was like 2 days after I had done it, I remember I looked down on the grass in the front yard and you could just see this, like somebody dumped a 5 gallon bucket of just acid on their grass from that dog. You know what I mean? Yeah. I kind of felt bad. I was like, man, I feel like I just robbed this lady, which I didn't. I worked hard, and I did a good job. You know, I did it to the T of how it should have been done. And my bid wasn't, like, astronomical. I think I made, like, 35% profit, which is probably what a lot of people make, if not less. Yeah. But to me, that wasn't, like, the idea of the business. Like, I wanted to go out there and just make a little bit of money for my time and be happy. Like I wasn't,
you were getting like overcomplicated, like really long, hard jobs. And
yeah. And it was like,
you're ahead in mind.
Yeah, and I'm like working 40 hours a week thinking about what I got to do after work. Yeah, and it just got sucks. To the point, you know, I mean, I wish I could show you my office. Like, it just looks like a bomb went off because it's just, like, here's one right here. So here's a job I got a bid right here. So basically, they want to add a garage right here, right? And I don't know if you can see this or not. They want me to put a wall in and dig all this out. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. Like, no problem. I'll do that. But you see the house, how it's like right there? I don't know if you can see that. If I dig all that out, what are those posts going to sit on? You know what I mean?
Is that a deck right there?
Yeah, it's a second story deck.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And then I come home and I'm looking at the picture I got and I'm like, Casey, how are you going to keep that deck from falling off the house? You know, because it's like a sunroom. And I just got looking and I was like, you know what? Let somebody out. You know, I got insurance and all that stuff and I pay a lot of money for that stuff. But I was like, man, just let somebody that does this, you know, 7 days a week do it. I don't have time to be digging with that. So I called the guy back, and I was being subcontracted from another guy that I've been working with. And I was just like, man, it's just too much. You know, and he's like, yeah, I get it.
You just want those kind of quicker jobs that you can get done on, like, a Friday or a Saturday, right? Not something that it's going to take you multiple weekends to complete.
Right.
So, like, and grading is, like, one thing that you want to get into, is, and then you're looking for an excavator to, like, trench and possibly hook up with, like, a guy for sewer sewer line installs and digging for those. Grading is one thing that I know a lot of inspectors who are listening is like, a big issue that we see, because they'll backfill, finish the house, but then the backfill settles, and then you got ground sloping towards your house, which causes foundation issues and stuff like that. What are you, like, if somebody calls you and they want you to come out and, like, grade their yard, what are you looking at, and, like, what's your approach for handling something?
There's two ways I look at it. One way is always water. You do not want water at your house. Everybody knows that, and everybody forgets that for some reason. So one first thing I'm always looking for is water. Second thing you go, and this comes from me because I'm a utility guy. I look for utilities. A lot of people forget about utilities. I'm looking, where's the transformers at? You know, where's the sewers at? That kind of thing. Where can I direct this water? Can I even do it? And that plays a big part in, like, those subdivisions, like where you're at, you know, like where you're at, you got that giant hill coming at you. You know, there's not a whole lot you can do as far as, like, grading. It's
yeah. Important. And there's only, you got a five, you know, there's 15 feet between each house, and there's, like, a 5-foot easement, so there's, like, not much room to work.
And then there's a ton of concrete and this and that, so that water gets moving. So if the city or whoever built the subdivision didn't do it right, I mean, then it becomes your problem. You don't want that going in your house. So I always pay attention to water and, like, easement issues. And then the second thing I go and I look at is, like, because, like, on a new house, they haven't had landscaping and stuff yet. Well, you don't want to go and, like, smooth all this stuff out if they're going to want to put a patio in, or if they're going to want to put a pool in, or if they're going to want to do this. You know, because sometimes, like, if the yard just kind of dives off, they're like, yeah, I just want to smooth it out. And you're like, and then we're going to put a pool in and this and that. It's like, well, why would I smooth all this out if you're going to put a pool in? Because you're going to put a wall up or something and backfill it. And when do you want this dirt? You know what I mean? So every situation is different. And luckily, because I've been doing landscaping, man. I shouldn't say it because it's probably illegal, but I've been going out on a job since I was 10 years old, 8 years old. You know, I ran a first Bobcat. I mean, dude, I couldn't even test the pedals. So grading is one of those things you got to have an eye for. I mean, all these new contractors got these lasers and this and that. I mean, I can get down. I can see a high spot. You know what I mean? I can tell my desk right here is not level. Like, I have an eye for it. And I enjoy doing it. I take my time to do it. It's not something you teach. It's just something that you learn. Like, I can remember my dad just taking me out to jobs and dropping me off. I couldn't even drive the truck, but I could drive the Bobcat. And he'd drop the truck and trailer and the Bobcat off. He'd be like, all right, dude, we don't want water going here. We want a swale here, natural fresh drain kind of deal. Direct it that way. I'll be back in a couple hours. If you have any issues, call me. And I just played, you know, and you just learn what works and what don't. You know, like, here's an example. Because I see a lot of, like, new companies doing this. Like, anybody can go buy a Bobcat or a skid steer. You'd be surprised when people are grading around houses. Let me use the old example over here again. So, if you got a house, You don't ever want to grade up against that house like this.
Lift it up a little higher.
You don't ever want to grade a house like this, like get right next to it and stuff, especially a new one. Because like we talked about, when an excavator digs a basement, it's pulling up all that clunky clay and stuff. It's just giant clods, right? And they dump it in a big pile, and then usually the contractor that builds the house, whatever, they throw it all up against the basement foundation, and then it settles. Well, if it doesn't look like it's settled, everything's good, and then you drive this 10,000-pound machine over that right into the house, dude. And I've seen it multiple times. So you always just kind of, smooth it out, kind of back around it, whatever. I always just keep from tipping the machine over or whatever, but I know it sounds stupid, but I've seen it a couple times, and it's... I don't know what goes on in insurance companies when a machine tips up against the house, but I cannot imagine that it's cheap to fix. I mean, it makes everybody look stupid. So, there's that. And then there's other things too. Like, you got people that got sewers and stuff, man. If you got like I actually did this at a customer's house. I accidentally, he didn't exactly know where where those laterals were. And I accidentally dug them up. He had a big burn pit. And he's like, I just want to bury that stuff. He didn't have like anywhere to dump it. And I was like, well, I can dig a hole over there. We just bury the stuff, no big deal. And he's like, yeah, that'd be perfect. Well, I was 500 feet from this house. I had no idea sewer ladders went that far. And I started digging, and there I found the pipe. And I thought, oh no. So then I had to fix it. So, but it, it wasn't his fault. He bought the house. You know how it is. It's the same thing when I bought this house. I really don't know where all that stuff's at. I kind of do, but I don't because I wasn't here when it was built. So there's that aspect of things. You got to know that kind of stuff, where it's at.
I think the biggest issue I see with guys that so I'll call out grading. They'll bring somebody in and they just add dirt and they build it up instead of sometimes you can't add dirt. You have to take it away and then do a swale. I know you mentioned swale, and I feel like that's a word that's not in a lot of landscapers' vocabularies. They just want to – their idea of fixing the grading is just adding more so it builds a hill. When sometimes, you need foundation exposed and siding can't be in contact with soil. Right. So sometimes you're not allowed to add more dirt. And plus, if you have basement windows, you might not be able to add any because it's going to be up above the windows.
Yeah.
So your only option is to take away, dig down to – and basically build a swale and direct water somewhere else.
Yeah. And people, a lot of these newer companies, I know I'm newer, but a lot of these lawn care companies have decided to do landscaping. They buy a piece of equipment and they take on these jobs and they put in this swale or whatever. It's really easy to mess up. It's really easy to get it to where it's too deep, have low spots, this and that, and then it holds water, and then you got mosquito problems, it's muddy, the grass don't grow, that kind of thing. It's easy to mess up. So there's a fine line between properly putting one in with the proper amount of slope to get the water away, but not too deep to where it's going to hold water, then that's where, laser levels and stuff come in real handy. But there's also ways, you can do French drains and stuff. You can add actual box drains in there, and then they clog up and stuff. I typically don't like to do that if I don't have to. But there is a lot more to it than just adding dirt. Why do people like to add dirt? It's quick, it's easy, and then you charge a little extra for each pile of dirt you dumped over there.
Well, and it looks like they fixed the grading. Appears as if they fixed it.
Yeah.
But really, it's just fucking soft dirt that the water's just going to drain right down through.
Yeah.
And then
compact it right. I mean, you don't just dump dirt and just smooth it out and throw grass seed on it. I mean, you got to compact it and this and that, like you said, or it will just go right through it and it'll end up washing it out or whatever. And it's not always the thing. And the other thing is, when these contractors build houses, you put a basement in, you got all this dirt. What do you do with it? Sometimes you just have to get rid of it. I know you can build it up, make these berms, make it look cool, and then plant trees and this and that. But sometimes there's just too much stuff. Excuse me, and it needs hold off. That's just part of a home business, especially when you do a subdivision. You got 50 homes out there. You get to a point where you just have too much dirt. Because you took the dirt out and you put something in its place, and you just can't keep building up all around that stuff or pushing it to the next lot and the next lot. So a lot of stuff you see with these subdivisions is they just got too much dirt. It's just time to get rid of some. You just can't always move it. So you see that every now and then, but I don't know, man. It's just every house is different. Everything's different. It's just doing line work full time. I spend so much time at people's houses, going in these backyards, and then people aren't ready for backyards. You'd be surprised how many backyards you go to if people like will put like those blow up pools or something, like right in front of like their, like, you know, they don't want to put it 100 feet out from their house, so they put it right next to the back door, right next to their gutter spout. You know what I mean? And you got this giant inflatable pool full of water, so it's making a nice seal tight. And the water's hitting it and then just directing right into like the basement window. You know what I mean? Like, I see it all the time, and I'm just always like, I just kind of shake my head, you know, because I'm there's alignment. I'm not really, you know, I'll mention something if I have to, but I see a lot of like stuff, like people do stupid things like that, or they'll put a shed, they'll get one of those tough sheds, have it delivered, you know, and they're like, well, I can't drive all the way back here, so I'll just put it right here, and then it's just like, well, you just totally just ruined the water flow out of here or whatever, you know. It's just,
yeah, water management is not on top of mind for a lot of people, and it's. It's so easy, though, just to look at a house and just imagine, like, if water were to just dump on it, where's that water going to go? That's the way I think most inspectors are trained to look at the house, because you're looking at gutters, making sure they're sloped properly. You're looking at roof lines, like valleys, mm-hmm. making sure, like, seeing where those – because sometimes you'll have a gable, like, and two of them are running right into each other, and then you got, like, a little one-foot gutter right here.
Yeah.
And you got all of that water –
yeah, you forget about all that surface area that's going to that.
Yeah, there's a video on my YouTube. I made a short of it. Check it out, because it's like 100 square foot of surface area, probably more than that, going right into this little. It's literally like 2 inches of a spot, and I'm like, when it rains hard, that's going to look like a waterfall coming off of that roof.
And they probably got trees, and then just clogs with leaves, and then you got even less. Yeah. Quote, you know, people will do some stuff, man. It's
yeah.
Sometimes they're not thinking about where water is. Sometimes you just got to call somebody who knows what they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm a victim of that. Like, there's a lot of things I'm like, I need somebody. I can do that. And then you get into it and you're like, kind of looks like shit, or man, that was hard, or whatever, you know? Sometimes it's just better to have a professional do it. I'm getting a back patio door done at my house. The other one's leaking or whatever. And she's like, can't you do it? And I'm like, yeah. I think I can. And I'm thinking about back at the time when I put like storm doors in and I fought the hell out of them, you know? And I'm like, you know what? Door guy.
Yeah. I could replace like the slab, but if it's like the frame and everything, I'm not messing with it.
No, it's like a door, man. It'll never shut right if I do it, or I have a little issue. And the other thing about that, like I was explaining to her earlier about something, they needed something done at her work. And she's like, can you come do it? And I said, listen, call a company to do it, because if you have an issue, you won't be calling me. You'll be calling the company. Yeah. And it'll probably be warrantied, this and that. You know, that's part of buying stuff. So yeah. I was like, you got to remember, sometimes it's better to go through a company because warranties, you know. So I don't know. We could talk hours about that. But
yeah, my neighbor up the street, he wants me to – he asked me to build his deck. And I was like, nope.
Yeah,
because he knows I built mine. I was like, no, I was like, I took my time on mine. Like, yeah. I don't want any kind of deadline thing. I don't want something happening and you getting hurt or what. Like, I don't want anything to do with it.
Oh, people are constantly changing through. You know, you won't finish it that day, and then you'll come back the next day and be like, hey, we were thinking about putting the stairs here, or then you're like, you know,
yeah,
that's one thing I've noticed about my small business is like contracts, like. Get them printed out, get them signed, and get your down payment. Like, I started out eventually, first started out, like, just working for buddies and stuff, so I wasn't really charging, but, like, I've quickly realized, get your material paid for. Because, you know, you got that one buddy that takes forever to pay you, and it's on, you know, it's you making it, you bought it, you know. So that's one thing.
I feel like I would be terrible at running a business like that, where you, like, need materials to, like, do stuff, because every project I start, I'm running to Menards 3 or 4 times that day because I forget something. And it's like, I'd write up this thing and then I ended up having to add 4 more items to it.
The worst thing about running a business right now is just the price inflation. I mean, most of the time when I do a bid, people are like, and I'm like, hey, like, I'm sorry, but rock is it's $10 more a ton than it was last year. You know, like right now where I get my rock, I get it from that market basket, a lot of my landscape stuff. I have a price sheet right here from last year. I guarantee you if I compare it to this year's, it's not the same. I guarantee it. And that's one thing that sucks about running a small business like this, because I don't have an office person. My wife don't do it. I do it. You know, all that stuff, I use the same app. What is it? QuickBooks? I've got all that stuff already plugged in there. And I don't think it works. Like, I don't think any of it's up to date.
There, I lose you.
What, something I've noticed is, like, the gas, like, when you're tracking your mileage on it, like, it's gone up, like, what the government gives you for mileage. I think when I got this app, it was, like, 50 cents or 48 cents, and now it's up to, like, 60-something cents a mile. But it's, like, you do kind of feel bad for people because not only are materials going up, but you've got to raise your labor costs because the cost of your groceries and your power bill and all that other stuff's going up.
Oh, so
it's
that's like fuel. I never remember my parents charging for fuel in their business. It just, you know, it was $1.60.
Oh, everybody's doing it now.
You have to, because even when you bid, like I do free estimates. It's just kind of the going thing. It's just kind of like a thing to do. Dude, I'm like, I got to take the car though. You know, if I take my truck out there, I might spend $40 in diesel just to get a no.
Yeah, that's why I just bought that $3,000 Honda.
Because
my Jeep's awful.
Yeah, I remember getting right out of high school. I was getting fuel like once a week because we were going places all the time, but it was not costing when I was. I just filled up today. It was $175. And I didn't fill the bulk tank. I just filled the truck. And the truck wasn't empty. So,
yeah, that's
crazy. And I, to be honest with you, mine kept going, but $175, that's where the credit card said no more. So, I don't know. It all pertains back to the economy, and it sucks. But it sucks as a business because you got to pass it on. If you don't pass it on, you won't survive.
Yeah, because it's hard to just eat. Like, there's some stuff I'll eat, but, like, so, like, I'll go, I think I got it set in my system at 65 miles. Anything after that, I charge for, like, a mileage fee. Which 65 miles is a lot.
That's a lot.
I said it like that because where I built my business is 45 miles away, you know. So
I'd say you can be quite far away.
I don't want to screw people that might be reusing me or agents that are still referring me over there. I don't want to turn them off with a gas mileage fee because I moved away. But
right. Is the inspection business still kicking?
What's that?
Is the inspection business still kicking, or is it, you seen it in the economy?
Yeah, it's been really busy. Last month and this month have been really busy. Picked up like mid-January, which I know when we had talked in January, we were like throwing ideas around on starting a new business. Because I was like super slow. I was like December I had 3 inspections.
Oh, wow.
But I usually do about 20. So
hopefully they pick up.
I'm hoping it stays the way it is, but where can people reach you? Like, where can they find your stuff
online? Because I'm so small, I book up fast, but basically just Facebook or YouTube. I mean, you can reach out to me on my YouTube channel if you want, but usually just do my business through Facebook Messenger or my phone number, or my phone's on there.
And what's the name, or what's like the is it Burns Earthworks on Facebook and YouTube?
Yeah, Burns Earthworks Facebook page. Pretty simple to find. It's not a big following. And I don't really show a whole lot of work on there. If you really want to see what I got, you just got to kind of message me and I can send you some stuff. But I've got so much work that I'm not really looking for any. You know what I mean? I'm not really advertising because I advertised right at the beginning and now I'm just to the point where I'm just word of mouth. You know how it is. You get word of mouth going and then you're good from there. So, but anything as far as, I don't know, anything property maintenance or, you know, I got that cool pile driver thing. If you guys, anybody wants something like that, I can do that. But just anything, any skid steer work, mini excavator work, I'll rent one if I have to, or I'm going to get one eventually. I think this summer I'll have one. I'm being picky, like I said, on what I want. So, those are the two sites really to find me.
I'll link your YouTube and your Facebook and stuff in the description. And then send me whatever on that pile driver thing, and I'll link that too if anybody's curious about that.
Yeah, it's gonna be a couple weeks probably before I get a video out on that, but I'll definitely link that on there. So, and my YouTube channel, for those who don't know, it's called Burns Earthworks because it started out like that, but it's the most random. It's just random. It might be live work one day.
You fixing a trailer, or
it might be me rewiring a trailer. It might be me yelling at my kid. I just crossed 2,000 subscribers on there. So.
Oh, nice. There you go.
Yeah. So, and some of them are loyal and some of them are assholes. So, you know, I just, I don't know. I just keep doing it. I've thought about changing the name to something different, but I'm just like, you know what? It is what
you
it
should
is.
You should change the name to Casey Does Stuff, because it's really just you doing stuff.
Right. And then one,
like, well, today we're going to tear a shed down, or today we're going to chop this tree down.
For a couple of months. Well, you know what the whole thing is with the YouTube real quick? The whole thing is with it. I want something, because my dad passed away. I want something my kids can go back and watch and be like, that's my dad. You know what I mean? I remember doing that with dad. That's all it was about. That's why I started it. I posted some early line work videos on there, but I quit posting that stuff because, like we talked, like, you got ocean violations and stuff. It's just not worth my job to post stuff on there that the companies can fire me for. So I quit doing that. So now I just post it that I do. Nobody can come after me. It's me. You know what I mean? So I don't put any line work on there. So anybody who's wanting to follow up for that, you might find old videos, but you're not going to find new ones. And then I don't post any, like, customer stuff. I don't like going to people's house and be like, hey, I'm going to record your house. Because I've done it a couple times, and they're kind of like... And then one guy was like, am I going to get paid for that? And I thought, I mean, technically, he should. You know what I mean? But I'm like, no. So I just like, you know what? We're doing stuff around my house. So...
All right. Anyway. Well, I appreciate you coming on. And I'll link your stuff in the description of this.
Okay. All right, man. It was good talking
to you. All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right. We'll see you.
See ya.